Welcome. This is William Evans, and you are listening to a Living World Conversation with Jim Withers. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Dr. Jim Withers is the founder of the Street Medicine Institute and has been invited to deliver the Albert Schweitzer Day's keynote address at the Wheeler Stallard Museum in Aspen on July 1. Events begin Monday, June 30th with the screening of a film, The Rise of Street Medicine, followed by a question and answer session with Dr. Withers. Jim, briefly tell us, who was Albert Schweitzer?
Albert Schweitzer was a physician who was born in 1875. Actually, he started off as a theologian, a renowned organ player, musician, theologian, writer, and sort of made his name, I think, in his early years, intellectually, in Alsace, if I'm saying it correctly, between the French and German borders.
Right.
And made a choice later in life to become a physician and commit himself to working in a very underdeveloped part of Africa in the early 1900s. He went on to develop a clinic there, and after years of hardship, he began to think about the meaning of it all and developed a philosophy which is called reverence for life. And as he began to talk and write about that, it gained the attention of the world. He came to Aspen and spoke, which is one of the few places he chose to come. I believe he was a huge fan of Goethe, and they were having a recognition of Goethe's life and works, and particularly, I think, the leadership that gathered the meeting in Aspen wanted it to be a reflective time, especially in history, because of the World Wars that we've been through, the changes, and really a struggle to recapture platforms upon which to build a more humanistic society. And so Albert Schweitzer was the speaker. He apparently had a great time and went on to win the Nobel Peace Prize.
3 years later.
Yes.
So he became much more visible and noticeable as a result, and has continued to have a presence in Aspen. And some of our local citizens have wanted to reinvigorate and refresh the memory of that experience. Why did you accept this invitation?
I've been to Aspen before. There was a showing of a film there, which Greg Poshman, who's a commissioner there in Aspen, way back in 2007, I believe, came to Pittsburgh and they did a film following me around for 2 weeks. And the film's called One Bridge to the Next. And I remember getting to know Greg, and I just was touched by his intelligence, his curiosity, and his attraction to humanism. So we stayed in touch. And I was aware of Schweitzer's association. And so I guess when time came to think about this event, which largely honors Albert Schweitzer's legacy and his previous trip, Greg thought of me and asked me to come. And I was incredibly honored. I think it's a good time in my life because I've been doing the work here in the streets and under bridges, and then in the decades, you know, after I started, I've been traveling all over the world helping new programs start, developing the field of street medicine. So I'm kind of entering, I think, a reflective phase more so than before of what is it all about, what does it mean, and so the Aspen Institute is there, and I just feel it's really important timing for me as well as a person to be able to kind of engage you all you know, time to think about such things.
Wonderful. And so in the course of your medical experience, you realized you needed to transcend the structural violence in the system.
Yeah, that's how I view it. I didn't have that language. It's been amazing to have a lifelong kind of quest, during which time you grope for words and language to sort of capture the things that are you're beginning to understand, the concepts that are beginning to coalesce, and so structural violence comes out of liberation theology. Gutierrez and Paul Farmer talked about it quite a bit, but it's the concept that in healthcare, at least, we have now an incredibly powerful and complex, efficient, industrial organization here in the United States. And I've been part of that. I've marveled at what we are able to do. But the individuals and their humanity, even back in med school, I realized that something was being lost in the largeness and the coldness of the whole medical healthcare system. Because of my childhood, I made house calls with my dad. He was a country doctor in rural Pennsylvania. My mother was a nurse. I learned to parallel park doing Meals on Wheels with her. We traveled when I was a teen to work in medically in three different summers, Nicaragua, Guatemala, and St. Lucia. I went to India in med school for a while. And so this notion of service, which in retrospect was very Schweitzer-y, I suppose, was really important to me. When I look back, I realize that it was that deep connection with people in their suffering, and especially people who've been sort of tossed aside and excluded, that was really where I felt the most nourishment. My own humanity was most exercised and fulfilled when I had to learn how to make the house call, if you will, but come to people, whether it be in a busy hospital, an emergency room, or some place out away from central medical services, but to bring what I had with to them, myself, most importantly, I suppose, and create a space in which there would be safety and trust and respect, the platform, if you will, the potential for healing. You know, we always think about people healing and we providing that service, but it's really people that need to be the authors of their own healing. And we at best can just reassure them that they're not alone, that someone's there in a non-judgmental way, in a consistent way, to help them along the choices that they need to make in their own healing journey or their own incomplete healing journeys. But I think, sort of like in oncology, sometimes you just realize that maybe one of the most important things is just for people not to feel alone, that there's someone there for them. I think healing is just such an incredibly interesting and misunderstood or under-understood process that we're just beginning to kind of rediscover. I think earlier, maybe in human history, we had a more organic sense of what it means to heal. And then once we commodified it and industrialized it, a lot of the deeper aspects, which Schweitzer understood, my dad understood, and I've been trying to explore, I mean, those are being lost. So, yeah, I wanted to liberate myself from structure. You know, I love my hospital. I love diagnostic things. It's exciting. It's challenging. But you need to kind of set aside some sacred space somehow to just be a human present to a person. And then the understanding begins, hopefully.
You said something to me when we were talking earlier that early in your career, you realized domestic violence is profoundly active in many of your patients, but rarely treated as something you could talk about, or it was almost deemed invisible.
Yeah, I'm hoping in my talks, and probably more likely in the discussions we have, that I'll be able to articulate a bit better. But my quest, I kind of think of it that way, towards becoming, towards a humanism, a place of humanism in healing. As I said before, one of the things that I just became fascinated with was the fact that people lived in other realities than the one I was experiencing in my white lab coat, and that those realities were invisible for the most part to the healthcare world. And I think, you know, I think you and I would agree, doctors have been some of the most arrogant people historically. I think a lot's put on our shoulders. Sometimes we feel like we have to be the Wizard of Oz when we're not. But there's that sort of choreographed understanding of who we are. And it does provide reassurance, and it does embody the nobility of our legacy. But we become blind to just the nuance and what's really going on in people's lives. People are reduced to a checklist and a problem plan, and these days much more a billing structure. And so domestic violence was something I began to see as a medical student, first I think in pediatrics and then in women victims for the most part, both here and in India. And the more I looked, the more I saw, and the more it became apparent to me that it was, and I use the analogy of the solar system, back when Copernicus or Galileo, whoever was arguing that the planets actually go around the sun. Blasphemy, I say. But in the same sense, I began to realize that the hypertension, the diabetes, and the things that we chase are revolving around an inner reality that the person is experiencing. And unless we can acknowledge, almost like Galileo, what's in the middle, we don't have an accurate view of what's going on. You know, he suffered for that. And I think anybody in the healthcare field that begins to say the human's experience is the central issue meets with resistance, and sometimes, frankly, with pushback in a negative way.
Right.
And domestic violence became sort of my window once I had my degree into the fact that we're not seeing what's there, and we need to learn to make that journey to someone else's reality.
This is KDNK, and you're listening to A Living World Conversation with Dr. Jim Withers. He's coming to the Roaring Fork Valley for Albert Schweitzer Days, June 30th and July 1st. You said something to me earlier that for me was very profound, and you had the realization that there is an external complexity, and that is the medical system is sicker than your patients.
Yeah, at least as sick. I think more so. I think, you know, people experiencing suffering and illness, you know, they do have personal responsibility, but so many times their illnesses, their struggles are related to things that they can't easily change. Poverty, racism, trauma histories, and things like that. And so I think for a medical system, and this applies to all the other aspects of society, in my opinion, but when we are rigid, in a biblical sense, pharisaical, if you will, and we expect people to fit into our boxes, and we have no tolerance for when they don't, and maybe there's some empathy from the nurses or people that are really on the front line, but we're trapped in this, I used to call it the carrot greeter effect. When you came through, you were just ripped up by the system. But structural violence is is kind of a more accepted term now. But when we can't reflect on how we're not meeting people or functionally even acknowledging, even if you can't fix it, what a person's going through, then, you know, what do we call it when you can't deal with reality? It's a thought disorder, right? And so I feel like the health system has a giant thought disorder, which, again, I think Schweitzer recognized when he criticized the ways that they were trying to make civilization better or more civilized. They would improve efficiencies and they would improve output and economic gains and things that are all legitimate. But in the end, I really feel resonance with it. We're much more important. We're much more spiritual, and we're much more holistically connected to each other, I think, than those structures. So that's a long way to sort of start to answer your question. But I felt like if we can't adjust to people, then perhaps it's the health system that's got the problem.
And one of the ways that you realized you had to look at people was with the reality that they were sacred.
Yes. And you can, you know, whatever your faith or your religion or whatever, I think people do, certainly for themselves, but I think we do perceive that there's a sacredness about each person and their reality. And in a way, we can never fully comprehend or be in their shoes. And I think only with a bringing to the healing relationship an attitude of curiosity, lack of preconceptions and judgments as far as we can do it, a sense of grace, we're all messed up. So you have to be more transparent. We're not trained to be very transparent. I remember a lecture I had on professional boundaries when I was in pediatric rotation, and I broke those boundaries with a patient, a young girl that was dying of leukemia, in the sense that I got close to her and I spent time with her and I listened to her and I got close enough that we were deeply connected, and it hurt her and it hurt me when she died. I mean, it hurt me when she died, but it hurt her to not be able to make things change. But I learned so much. She was one of the greatest teachers I ever had in med school. And so I think that, and again, I relate to Schweitzer's sense of the sacredness of each living being in his reverence for life. But I think that that has been a deep theme of my quest, my journey, is to sort of find a way to go to that sacred place with people. And experience it in that light. And it doesn't just open up the relationship, but it, or even make it more productive, but you begin to change yourself. You know, I remember before I told anyone what I was doing or heard of anybody else sneaking out to take care of people under bridges, at first I went in the street and I learned about the street and the people on it. The dangers, the strengths, all the things that you learn when you go to where someone is. But then I had this really interesting moment where I had to ask myself, what am I now? What's a street doctor? The cops certainly wanted to know, but the people on the street. But ultimately, I realized it's my question to answer. I have to now say, what is this whole healing profession now? It's not structured the way it currently is, but it feels so good and it feels so deeply right. And that's why we get students from all over the world and people taking up the field of street medicine all over the world, because they feel the rightness of that sacred space that you find with people. And the mutual journey then you have with each person and the community building too. So I think it's just radical. It's an inversion largely of the power structure, but it's much more than that. I think it's a shared discovery of who we are, That's why when I was in South Africa, I could relate so much to the new street medicine program that I was helping them get started, because they had such deep need for reconciliation there. And I could feel that. It's the same as here, you know. Sad to say, my ancestors owned slaves that had enslaved people. And I'm aware, you know, especially after George Floyd and some other things, it just began to really hit me at a deeper level how much of the woundedness that we're all suffering has to do with our shared story. And we have to rewrite that story. We have to have new beginnings. We have to liberate ourselves to some degree without forgetting. And I do think that the milieu of the street medicine model allows for that kind of hope and that kind of liberation to really just relate at the heart level, to the mind, and together to kind of reweave the fabric of community to some degree.
You realize you want to help people regain their soul.
Yeah, that's a bit dramatic, but I tend to be that sometimes. But I do think that there's something really at stake here. And, you know, when you talk to students and even retired nurses and doctors, they know that there's a war going on for what's this all about. And a very deep part of it is a sacred trust that we have with the people we serve. I think that there are sort of archetypal components to society. There's always leaders. There's always warriors. There's always builders. And I think there's always been healers. And I think so we have a kind of a, we share with other professions and non-medical components of society. But we're losing, you know, that trust that is implicit. You know, when I started going under bridges, one of the things that didn't surprise me but overwhelmed me was how much people hated the health system, how much they've been hurt and damaged by it. And I had to listen. I was an emotional punching bag for a long time. But I could believe what they were saying, and many said, I'd rather die. I'd rather die than go to the hospital. And I watched them die. And then I saw the ugly side when I was escorting people, you know, the paramedics, the police sometimes, the emergency rooms, people like me inside the hospital. And I realized the view from the street is pretty ugly. And yet, when I began to become really trusted, they expressed love for me like I never heard from patients. It was almost like we'd be willing to die for each other. And that moved me a great deal. And so I realized that stethoscope still has some symbolic value left in it. And people waited for me, and they cried a lot. One guy at the riverbank said, he's watching me take care of someone's foot, and he just started sobbing. And I said, you know, what's up? He said, I can't believe somebody cares that we're still alive. The only gratitude I saw like that was when I was in India, and the people with advanced leprosy, you know, if you hug them, you could just feel this deep, deep gratitude, which at first I thought was great, and then I realized nobody should be this grateful just to be treated like a human. There's something wrong in that picture. And we really have otherized many people, but none any more so than the people who are dying at 10 times the rate of the population on our streets.
And you said 80 medical schools now have a street medicine track.
Yeah, health science schools, 80, mostly they involve medical students. It's one of the great, I mean, I have many, many, besides my kids, you know, I have many things I just give thanks for, but the students, it was my kind of notion to make this a classroom. And I had students from the early days And when the folks above had deaf ears, I watched as students who were smarter than any of us started seeking out the street medicine experience and then going on to demand it in their schools and then to become leaders. It's a hard nut to crack, you know, the dehumanization issues, but there's some really fierce warriors. And what I believe that I and others have given them is, you know, just the sense that they're not crazy for caring about somebody. So it's using the old initial vaccination series from my folks, you know, you just have to give them a booster shot to say, you know, you're not crazy.
And listening can be a booster shot.
Absolutely.
I agree. Schweitzer had the stature of an authentic human being. It's been a delight to talk with you. Thank you, Jim.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad for your listeners, and I hope all goes well.
Yeah, let me kind of summarize what I know about the schedule. June 30th, there'll be a film, and you'll be there for questions. The Rise of the Global Street Medicine Movement in Basalt at TACAW, T-A-C-A-W, June 30th. And on July 1st, an organ recital at 4 p.m. at the Aspen Community Church. 5:30, the Second Coming of Albert Schweitzer with Paul Anderson. And 6:30, you'll do a keynote address at the Aspen Historical Society. Thank you so much.
Looking forward to it.
Me too. This is KDNK. You've been listening to A Living World Conversation with Jim Withers. Thank you for listening.